Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Look out, and I kind of see a thin crowd today. I hope the going forward didn't leave everyone still asleep in bed. And hopefully y'all are awake too. So we are in the book of Exodus as we are continuing. We are still at Mount Sinai, and today we're going to be looking at the garments of the priest and some of the functions that they are going to do. On last Sunday, we looked at the sin of the golden calf, and on Wednesday night, we looked at the tabernacle and all the instructions that go along with that. And so we will be continuing on kind of with the same idea. I believe this is when Moses is on the mountain for the first time, and he, in that 40 days, and he gets this instruction from the Lord on quite a few things. He gets the Ten Commandments, he gets instruction for the tabernacle, and he'll be given information and things to do with the priest. And so we'll go ahead and jump right into it. We will be in Exodus 28 and 29 today is where we are going to be. And in verse 1 of chapter 28, God selects Aaron and his sons as the priest. It says that, "Bring near to yourself Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the sons of Israel to minister to as priests to me, Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, Aaron's sons." So we see there God selects Aaron and his sons to be the high priest and the priest. In verse 2, so God basically is going to start giving instruction on the garments of the priest and what they should be wearing, especially here in chapter 28, is going to be talking about the high priest and the uniform, the garments that the high priest is going to be wearing. And it mentions in verse 2 at the very end that these are holy garments and they are for glory and for beauty is what God describes these garments as. He's going to mention that again in verse 40 of chapter 28. There, note this, though, that the garments that are going to be described here in chapter 28 are going to be different than what he wears, the high priest wears on the Day of Atonement, when he would go in before the Lord, before the Ark of the Covenant, in the most holy place. He would change his clothes. He would, bathe and change his clothes, and he would wear a white garment as he entered into the most holy place. And in verse 3, it says that, we'll just read it. It says, "You shall speak to the skillful persons whom I have endowed with a spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister as priest to me." So God is going to give these gifted artisans, these skillful people, the spirit of wisdom is what my version says. You know, when we build anything today, from houses to buildings of any type to clothing, you're going to have people that would go. Nowadays, it's all computer programs that you go in and you would design whatever it may be, right? And so you have that visual representation. You say, okay, this is what I want. This is what I want it to look like, exactly that. And then you go and give it to whoever's going to make the clothing or a house, whatever. You know, they didn't have that, right? So I think with the idea that is this wisdom that is coming upon them, the spirit of wisdom, is that God is going to put the spirit in them, that they are going to understand exactly what God wants in these garments when he is describing this. Because in a lot of the detail here, it's described, but we're not exactly sure, right? I mean, we're given a lot of detail, but we don't have that visual. We have a lot of good ideas of what it must have looked like, but we don't know exactly for sure what exactly God was wanting. But these people that made the garments did. Oh, there we go. Okay, continuing on. Looking at The Levites, this is a quote from the Waldron's book. It says, "The Levites will soon be numbered, organized, and presented to the to Aaron as his assistants. But though the Levites will serve as the assistants to the priest, God was quite specific in saying that the priests themselves were to be Aaron, his sons, and his direct descendants after him. That is, all priests were Levites, but none of the Levites, except for the direct descendants of Aaron, could offer sacrifices or perform any of the duties specifically assigned a priest. There were times in their history when some of the Levites themselves objected because they were not allowed to offer sacrifices, and they were punished severely for their rebellion." That is referring to the rebellion of Korah that we'll look at later in the quarter. Here's the genealogy of the priesthood. Of course, it's going to be Aaron and his son, so it's from the house of Levi, from the tribe of Levi. You have Kohath here, Amram, the father of Moses and Aaron and Miriam. And you see Aaron there, you see Moses, and Aaron has four sons here listed as Eleazar and Ithamar. Nadab and Abihu are not listed on there because we know, and we're going to find out, that they are going to die. They offer strange fire to the Lord in Leviticus 10. And so they are not listed on the priesthood. And we also know that the high priest is going to go through Eleazar. But it does appear that at some point it changes over to Ithamar. It's my understanding that the judge that we think of, Eli, was also high priest at the time, at the early part of 1 Samuel. And he was from the line of Ithamar, not of Eleazar. And so somewhere it must have changed. We don't know exactly why. Continuing on, looking at the functions of the priest. Another quote from the Waldron's book says, "The sacrifices," and just kind of to get your mind around this, these next couple slides are going to be, we're looking at what some of the functions that they would be doing in worship. It says here, "The sacrifices to be offered under the law of Moses were much more complex than they were during the patriarchal period. It is essential to have people set apart who would have nothing else to occupy their attention but the offering of the holy things of the Lord. Therefore, the priests were to charge not to drink wine or strong drink, that they might make a distinction between the holy and the common, and between the unclean and the clean. And they were commanded to teach Israel all the statutes of the Lord." Leviticus 10 is going to mention they should not be drinking strong drink like that. And then in Malachi 2, it is instructing, it's telling that the priests are to be the messenger of the Lord to teach the law. And so they are to be set apart from the common people, right? They're going to be mediating between God and his people. Here are the last two kind of quotes we have here. It says, "It was their task," we're still talking about this is what the priest should be doing, "to keep charge of the sanctuary and the charge of the altar, that there be no wrath upon the children of Israel." In the New Testament, the Hebrew writer says, says of the high priest, "And by reason thereof is bound, as for the people, so also for himself to offer for sins," or offer sacrifices for sins. And so one of the things that they're going to be doing is offering sacrifices to the Lord for the sins of the people and for themselves. Perhaps the clearest proof of the intercessory role of the priest is that Jesus became our high priest, and in context emphasizes the effectiveness of his priesthood. The Hebrew writer says, "He ever liveth to make intercession for them." And so we have the idea here. We realize, because of what God has done for us through Jesus, that he is our high priest and he is the mediator for us between to God. And so that's one of the functions that the priests are going to have, is to be a mediator, a go-between God and man. There. And so that's one of their functions. So let's go ahead and jump in Exodus 28. We look at the garments of the high priest. We're going to have two slides here that kind of give you a good idea. And we're going to go back into detail in the description here in a second. But starting from the head, he's got a turban on, a white linen turban. And on top of that, he's going to have a kind of a sign. It's a piece of gold that would be attached to the turban. And it would say, "Holy to the Lord, holy to Jehovah," on it. From there, pointed out, you see onyx stones that are going to be attached here and here. A gold chain that's going to attach this breastplate. And on the breastplate, you have four rows of three, all of precious stones, representing the 12 tribes. Underneath that, you see in purple the ephod and its woven belt here. Underneath that, we have a blue sleeveless coat. And underneath that is a robe of checkered fine linen. Looking at another depiction of it, very similar here. The description is kind of, it has gold and blue and violet and scarlet all kind of intertwined in the ephod, and so it's slightly different. So we're going to kind of look at these in detail, but that gives you a kind of a visual representation of what it probably looked like, garments of the high priest. So for our purpose, though, we are going to look at it kind of as if we were going to put this on ourselves. So just like as we would put anything on, we would start with undergarments, right? So we're going to start kind of in the latter half of chapter 28 and kind of work our way backwards. So in verse 42 of chapter 28, it says, "You shall make for them linen breeches to cover their bare flesh," or their nakedness. "They shall reach from their loins even to their thighs." We'll kind of look back at this here in a little bit, but that's the first article of clothing that they would put on, is these linen breeches, these trousers that are going to cover their waist down to their thighs, is what it says. On top of that is the coat. It's that white, when you looked at that picture, the white there that you see with the sleeves and down here at the bottom. It's mentioned in verse 39. "You shall weave the tunic of checkered work of fine linen." And then it also mentions the turban. We'll get to that here in a minute. And so a lot of times, looking at kind of the Hebrew, I think there's an indication that when it says a fine linen, that it's kind of automatically going to be a white color. And so that's why I think it is a white checkered of some sort. We're not exactly sure, but that's kind of gives you an idea. On top of that is this robe. The robe is mentioned in verse 31. "You shall make the robe of the ephod all of blue or of violet. There shall be an opening at its top in the middle of it. Around its opening there shall be a binding of woven work, as like the opening of a coat of mail, so that it shall not be torn." And at the bottom of this, I didn't point it out in the pictures, but at the bottom, "You shall see a hem of pomegranates, of blue, of purple, scarlet material. All around its hem, the bells of gold between them, all around." And so at the bottom of this blue garment, here you can kind of see, is going to be all these gold balls. And so when he would walk, you would be able to hear him walking through the tabernacle in that way. It doesn't come quite out and say it, especially in English. And when I was studying this, a lot of people, there's an understanding that this tunic that he wears, this robe, is a seamless, that it was pure, it was a woven material. And especially it said that it's not to be torn, right? I think over in John chapter 19, I think that there might be a hint. You know, we're told later in Hebrews that he is our high priest, right? But I think that there is a hint there of the fact that he is our high priest. If not, it's very similar language that's used. In verse 23 of chapter 19 of John, Of course, this is at the crucifixion. It says the soldiers, when they crucified Jesus, took out his outer garment and made four parts, a part for every soldier, and also the tunic. Now, the tunic was seamless, woven in one piece. And so they said to one another, let us not tear it, but cast lots for it to decide whose it shall be. Thus, to fulfill the scripture, they divided my outer garments, and for my clothing they cast lots. There very possibly is a connection here. At least, it's not to be torn, right? If it's not just completely seamless, the garment's not to be torn. Of course, Jesus' garment is not torn there as they take him to the cross. Maybe a foreshadow, a hint that he is our high priest there, possibly. Continuing on, we have the ephod that's mentioned in detail starting in verse 6. It's going to be made of gold, of blue, of purple, of scarlet material. And it's going to go kind of over, starting here, and kind of work its way down towards the thighs. And on top of that, there is going to be a breastplate with a Urim and a Thummim. And on this breastplate, we'll talk about a little more here in a second, but it's going to have the 12 stones, these precious stones on it. That's going to have the names of the 12 tribes on each one of them. Verse 9 also mentions a part of the ephod is these onyx stones. It's going to be attached at the shoulders. And it would have on there written 6 of the 12 tribes on each one. So you have that as well. You have the breastplate with that, the Urim and the Thummim. We're not told a whole lot about that, of what these were. It appears that they were some type of way of inquiring from the Lord. My understanding is on this breastplate that there was some type of pocket and that these two objects were put in there. And so that when they had a question to the Lord, they could ask him and, you know, they would reach in and grab one of them and whichever one was grabbed would answer the question that they had. Maybe a yes or no type question. But we're not told a whole lot about it. We are told that it is mentioned again in Nehemiah, so over 1,000 years from this. It is mentioned that they have it and that it is used in that context as well. But again, we're just not told much about it. If it was two stones, if it had writing on it, it had to have been some type of small objects. But besides that, we don't know, except that they were used to inquire of God. And then, of course, the turban that's put on his head. We kind of touched on that already. Says in verse 36 that there's going to be a gold plate on top of this turban, a pure gold, and it's going to say, Holy to the Lord, Holy to Jehovah. I think this is the only time in Scripture, at least in the Old Testament, that this is mentioned, Holy to the Lord, that it's going to be written out somewhere, except in Zechariah 14 and verse 20, when there he has a vision there of kind of the day, kind of depicting heaven, I think. And on that day, there are even going to be inscriptions on the horses and on the parts of horses that they would put on. They would have holy to the Lord. And I think the idea there is that everything's going to be holy, even the horses will have that on them, that holy is the Lord. Okay, let's look at the breastplate really quickly. In verse 29, it says, So Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of judgment over his heart when he goes into the holy place, a memorial before the Lord continually. And so in verses 15 through 21, we're not going to read all of that, but it mentions all of the precious stones that are brought out. There's rubies, diamonds, sapphires, jasper, all of these. There's just a bunch of them, and it kind of depends on your translation. Some of them are a little different, but you have a pretty good idea of what, to give you an idea of what it would have looked like, and you can kind of see some writing on some of them. There. And so they would have had each of the tribes on this breastplate like that. And he would go in before the Lord in the holy place and they would be before the Lord, a memorial before God constantly. It's also interesting to note that it's on the breastplate that these 12 stones in the Old Testament. But in Revelation 21, we are told that there are 12 stones on the foundation of heaven. And so it kind of gives you a parallel there. They're in the presence of God as Aaron goes throughout the tabernacle. They're going to be in his presence, right? But they're in heaven. They're on the foundations, representing the people of God in God's presence. I find it interesting, too, that here it's on an earthly thing, right? That it's in the tabernacle, it's on Aaron. But when it switches over to the New Testament and some of the promises that we have, it's always far greater than what is in the Old Testament. Here, it's on the foundations of the walls of the city. We're talking about heaven there, that the foundations have these stones representing God's people there. Y'all have any comments? Okay. Slowing down, because I see I got plenty of time, are y'all awake? I know we've lost an hour, so try to keep you awake. At the end of chapter 28, we are told a little bit more about the tunics for the rest of the priest. We've kind of gone into great detail, and there's a ton of detail about the high priest, but we're not told that much about the tunics of the regular priest. Verse 40, it says that you shall make tunics. It's kind of a linen garment here, that they are going to have a sash with it, and that they will have caps for them for glory and for beauty. So the difference here is that the high priest is going to have a turban on. It's going to be a lot taller. But for the regular priest, it's going to have just a cap on. It's going to be a lot smaller, closer to the head that they would wear there. They're going to have that this tunic on with a sash, and so they have kind of wrapped around them like a belt would be. I think this is a white garment that they are going to wear. A lot more plain, not near as complex as what the high priest is going to wear. In verse 41, it says, "You shall put them on Aaron and on his brother, your brother, and on his sons with him, and you shall anoint him and ordain them and consecrate them that they may serve me as priest. He shall make for them linen breeches to cover their bare flesh. They shall reach from the loins even to the thighs. They shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they enter the tent of meeting, and or when they approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they do not incur guilt and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and to his descendants after him." So, just real quickly, you can kind of see on the left part of that screen. Let's look at the purpose of these linen trousers. When digging through this, I kind of had two questions. First of all, you got to kind of be careful, I guess, with, well, this is Old Testament stuff. And does it really apply to the New Testament? But there are times that we can find maybe definitions that God has described and apply that to the New Testament. For example, here, it says that they're going to make linen trousers to cover their nakedness. And it says it's going to go from their loins or their waist to their thighs. So, the next question I have is, well, what is the thighs? Is it the upper thigh? Is it the middle thigh? Is it down to the knee? You know, what is it? And so in researching this, it's very, very, very clear that this garment that they wore would have gone from their waist to their knee. It would have covered the entire thigh, is what this is talking about. So, that might give you an idea about what maybe God considers naked. Over in Isaiah 47, in verse 2 through 3, it says, Take the millstone and grind meal. Remove your veil, take off the skirt, uncover the thigh. Pass through the waters. Your nakedness shall be uncovered. Yes, your shame will be seen. There, it's identifying the thigh as being naked. Especially in this context here, I see that they're talking about to the Lord when they are worshiping God. I think we especially need to be careful about when we are entering worship, what we are wearing, and to be modest and to have things covered. I've never been to Rome. I'd like to go. I'm sure there's some of you in here that have and maybe have gone to Vatican City. You know, Vatican City is the would be considered the holiest point to the Catholics. And in there, to go through their museums, especially to see the Sistine Chapel, one of the things that is a requirement is your shoulders have to be covered and you have to wear clothing to the knee. The short shorts, mini skirts are not allowed. They will not let you in. And it is because it's supposed to be a reverent place, a religious place. I find that really interesting that even the Catholic Church and what they have, there are times that they say you cannot wear short shorts or things like that. I find it also interesting that we're talking about the men, that this is to Aaron and to his sons after him. Oftentimes when we talk about modesty, we talk about women. We harp on women. But I think us guys have to be careful too. You know, a while back, I think like in the 1970s, some of y'all, you know, the shorts were like really short, right? Really, really short. Well, then it kind of got progressively longer and longer and longer. And you can see like NBA players in the early 2000s. They're basically wearing capri pants now. I mean, they're like really, really long. And but now, you know, it's getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. We got to be careful with that. It's easy to not even realize it, too. It can be very easy to not even realize what you're wearing. But I think we can see here that perhaps this is what God considers naked. And we need to be conscious of that and what we are wearing. Especially, I guess we're getting kind of in the warmer season too. Might be a good reminder there too. Y'all have any comments? Any others? How much time I have left? Oh yeah, yeah. Considering that if they didn't wear them or whatever it was, it's punishable by death, right? Yeah, that's a good thought there. You know, others say that this was an influence maybe by a priest of Egypt, that they would have worn something like that. But in my reading of that, a lot of the priests of Egypt in the trousers that they had on were shorter. They were shorter than what the Israelites would have had on. That's just something to consider. I know that's not our main focus, but that's maybe something good to consider and think about. Good comments. Okay. Moving on to chapter 29, we have the consecration of the priest, or the instructions on this. We have the priestly hallows, these sacrifices. They are to consecrate the priest, is what this is there for. We have the preparation of the priest. This is also going to be repeated later on when this actually happens, I think in Leviticus. But we have the preparation that they are going to have to be washed, adorned, and then anointed is what these are going, is the things that God is telling Moses to do to these priests. They have these offerings that are going to happen. We have the bull, we have rams, we have bread that is offered with a sacrifice, which is associated with the burnt offering, the wave offering, the sin offering, of course. The first one is always going to be that sin offering that's established there. And peace offerings as well that go along with that. We also are told, well, let me back up for just one second there. In verse 20, it says that you shall slaughter the ram and take some of its blood and put it on the lobe of Aaron's right ear on the lobe of his son's right ear, and on the thumbs of their right hands, and on the big toes of their right feet, and sprinkle the rest of the blood around the altar. So they're to put blood on the right ear, on the thumb, and on the big toe. What do you think that maybe represents? We're not told. But I think we might can get a decent idea. My thought is that perhaps this is, you know, whatever they hear, whatever they do, wherever they went, it's supposed to be for God. That's their purpose, is to live for God. And perhaps that is what that is wherever they're going, whatever they're doing, and whatever they hear, it should all be for God's purpose. The priest and the garments are to be handed down, especially the Aaron's. It says in verse 29, the holy garments of Aaron shall be on be for his sons after him, that they shall be anointed and ordained. For 7 days the one of his sons who is priest in his stead shall be put them on, shall put them on whenever he enters the tent of meeting to minister to the holy place. So when they are ordained, it's kind of the same idea is of when today you'll see kings that are brought out before, and I think, what do they wear? They wear old crowns. You know, they've been in the lineage for, you know, 1,000 years, and they'll have the scepter, the super old, that you know, kings and queens have had for long times before that. And I think that perhaps that's what's going to be going on here, is when a new high priest is put in place, that he would wear those garments for 7 days as he enters in to being the high priest. In verses 36 through 42, the altar is going to be consecrated there. And then finally, in verses 43 through 46, and we'll just quickly read that, God is going to dwell with his people. It says, I will meet there with the sons of Israel, and it shall be consecrated by my glory. And I will consecrate the tent of meeting, that's the tabernacle, and the altar. And I will consecrate Aaron and his sons to minister as priests to me. I will dwell among the sons of Israel and will be their God. They shall know that I am the Lord, their God, who brought them out of the land of Egypt, that I might dwell among them. I am the Lord. And that's how chapter 29 ends, as he's put all of this emphasis on what the priests are going to wear, how the tabernacle is to be built, and he's going to put instructions on how this is going to be installed and put into place and consecrated for service to him. And that they are going to know that he is the Lord, the one that brought them out of Israel. And that is how chapter 29 ends. I think I'm just a minute or two early. Y'all have any comments? Mike, first. This is a good point. Mike says that, you know, they are, when they do something, they do exactly what they're told to do when they're doing all of this, these very fine details, and that we need to do the same thing and when we worship today. Did I see another one? Brent, did you have a comment? Right. It's a good comment. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop there then. Thanks, everybody.